Welcome to The Positioning Show, where we discuss topics related to the practical application of positioning for marketing, sales, and product teams. I'm April Dunford, a consultant, author, and the world's leading expert on positioning for B2B technology companies. This week, I'm super excited to have a special guest with me, Abhinav Asthana, who is the CEO and co-founder of Postman. If you don't know Postman, trust me, your IT department does. Postman has a platform for building and using APIs. It is used by 30 million users worldwide. They have 500,000 paying customers. I was very lucky to work with Postman a few years back, and I've been kind of watching them in awe ever since then. They're just an incredible success story, and I think a really amazing positioning example. So I was so excited to have Abhinav on the show to go through a bunch of things. So we talk about how their positioning has changed since when they first conceived of the product to where it ultimately landed as a platform. There were some steps along the way, and I think it's really instructional to look at that and see how the positioning evolved. We also talked a bit about how they were mispositioned in the market, especially by industry analysts, and what Postman did to kind of change that perception of them in the market. We talked a bit about their product-led growth motion. I think these folks do an amazing job of this. And in particular, I wanted to get at the positioning implications of we have a free version and we're positioning one way for end users, or in this case, developers. And then there is the paid version, which is sold over top at an executive level. And so I wanted to talk about the differences in positioning there and how those folks thought about that. And then lastly, I think Postman does a really amazing job of communicating their particular point of view in the market and why they look at building APIs in a very different way from other competitors or other approaches to solving the API problem in the market. If you read my second book, Sales Pitch, I use these folks as a case study, mainly because I think they did such a good job with that piece of it. So I'm really excited to have this conversation. I think you folks are going to find this really super useful. I know I did. So let's get at it. So great to have you on the podcast. How are you doing?
Thanks for having me here, April. I'm excited to be here.
So good. So I'm pretty excited about this one because, you know, you and I have done a lot of talking back and forth. And, you know, in doing this kind of work, positioning work with founders, I feel like some founders just have kind of an innate thing where they just get it. And I feel like you're one of these people. So I've been excited about this conversation for a while. I thought it'd be cool to talk about the origin story for Postman. Like, what was the original idea, you know, when you and your co-founders were first coming up with the idea, and what did you think it was going to be at the very start?
Great. Yeah, that's a great place to start. So Postman started as a side project of mine, you know, back in 2012. Me and my co-founder met each other at Yahoo. And then my third co-founder was actually at my first startup. And what we figured out was most of our time as developers, and we are all developers, was spent on working with APIs. And what we thought of our job as was primarily writing code. But what I figured out was eventually either you're building APIs or using APIs created by someone else. And that process was, you know, quite painful. Even at a large company, and Yahoo was kind of like, you know, kind of still a pretty big company back then. You know, this was prior to the whole Microsoft thing that happened later. So they had their whole internal infrastructure basically built, you know, through APIs. But still, there was no like single place we could go to. Most of our work typically involved writing some code, running to our manager's desk, asking him, you know, how does this work? Going back, and eventually we found out that, you know, stuff did not work in production. So we spent a lot of late nights debugging what was wrong, and it often turned out that debugging was hard if you did not know what the API was kind of doing. So that memory kind of stayed with us. I started my first company, and I was an intern at Yahoo, so this was, you know, right after college, and I found out that we were basically building a mobile app, and, you know, that was on the web, Android, iOS, and basically we had to build an API. And while we were a small company, about four or five people, it was still the same problem. We had to build the API, share the API with kind of the engineers out there. And I looked around and I didn't find really something that was good enough. And nothing really was built for developers. Stuff that was out there was very clunky. It was not well designed. And there's always like this whole thing about developers that if something is complex enough, that's when you use it. But I really wanted something simple because I needed, you know, work to get done. So I was like, okay.
Was there something that people were using? Like,
there were these extensions, you know, back then. So Postman started as a Chrome extension too, but there was this curl, which was a command line tool.
Yep.
There were Firefox extensions. There were browser extensions. You know, very simple things that you basically had to cobble together to build your whole workflow.
Yeah. And so what was the original idea? So you guys, was the idea going to be a testing tool only at the beginning, or, you know, what was
the thinking? After that, actually, things got very, very interesting. So we put this out there. It had massive traction. Developers started kind of loving it. But then we noticed that APIs kind of have this network effect of sorts where I'm sharing an API with my team. The team is sharing APIs with other teams. An organization is sharing APIs. If you think about the Facebook API, the Twilio API, you know, they are sharing APIs with third-party developers. There are partners. Everybody's sharing APIs with each other. And we reasoned that basically that's how software is going to be built, you know, in the world. And, you know, there are only two ways to build like bigger pieces of software. Either you can combine more and more software libraries, you know, maybe you pick through open source, maybe you buy some stuff and combine them into a larger piece. Or you use APIs that are available and you can just inject them with like, you know, a few lines of code. So we saw this opportunity and this was only going to grow with the growth of cloud and all the third-party APIs and really how development practices were changing. And Postman found itself to be in the center of that. Now, where we built our first product around was, you know, this idea of team collaboration, where teams could be more productive when they are trying to work together. So I'm a backend developer, and I need to share my API with like five other developers. That's the first product we built. And really, we were like three guys. We didn't have funding. You know, Postman already had reached like about 500,000 users on the Chrome Web Store. So investors got very excited, which we did not know about. And we were not out fundraising, but you know, investors came to us and saying
they were excited all on their own without. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Like to back that up before you get to the fundraising thing, like when you first launched the thing, like how did you guys, I'm thinking about positioning, like how did you guys describe it? Like when you, like what did you think you built?
That was very, very hard, right? We started with Postman as a REST client that was in the name. And I thought about it for a long time, and it was in it was good to get SEO through that, right? If you're searching for a REST client, people would come in there. I was there active in all communities like Stack Overflow, Twitter, like I was posting a lot. And then from a REST client, it, you know, we tried to name it to be like a Swiss Army knife for developers, like as we added more tools. And that's been like a constant challenge for Postman that, you know, you and I also worked on, was that as we added more and more things, it was always consistently hard to describe it. So our positioning kept changing over time.
But
I think we always looked at what did we want to accomplish for the customer? And in this case, it was developers. And will they understand, you know, and they get started with the product right away? So very simple, you know, it's a tool. You download it, use it, get started in a few seconds. That's what we started with.
Yeah. And was the idea then, like, did you always have this vision from the beginning that it was going to be this bigger thing?
You know, to be honest, no. You know, I was just amazed, right? Like, I had built stuff over time and, you know, like, you are always pushing for traction, you're pushing for growth, and it doesn't happen, right? Like, it doesn't matter how much money you raise, what marketing you do, how many salespeople you hire. And actually, fortunately, I had not done the salespeople side, but we had done the other stuff well. But there was so much pull from developers that, you know, we were just pulled in. I think what we did have to do was two things, you know, talking to customers to get real feedback, like why that was happening. And second was, you know, we were like data driven, I'd say from day one. Like we were instrumenting the product, you know, with first party analytics that was very useful later on. we yeah. were looking at network effects. We were, you know, I used to look at job listings, SEO rankings. And over time, we saw that how big this was going to be. And at that time, actually, you know, everybody thought this is just a tool. You know, maybe it's a decent tool, but once we build that conviction that modern software is going to be built on APIs, that's when we started evangelizing the bigger thing.
Right, right. And so at the beginning, was it open source?
We had a small part that was open source, but then it just became free. So it was
then
a free
it just
tool.
Became free. And so at what point then did the investment come in? Were you still just, were you only a free thing when you got the first investment?
Yeah, free thing, no revenue. And we told our investors, don't ask us about revenue for a while.
I like these investors. So they were like, that's cool. Revenue, shmevenue.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Your user numbers were crazy.
Yeah, we had a lot of traction.
And so was there a plan? Like, did you have a longer term plan of how you're going to monetize this thing? Or was the idea we're going to figure it out once we go there?
Actually, yeah. So I said no for a very, you know, I kept saying no until we built conviction that this is going to be something we could make money off of. And there's a relevant customer value to solve for. And my solution actually was I put a web page out, which I remember, you know, didn't have product, the monetizable product, right? We had the free product. So I put this thing out, which said, you know, Postman is going to help you with your team collaboration for APIs or something of that nature. I don't remember exactly. And it's going to cost like $29. And I put a price point.
$29?
Yeah, per user per month. You know, per user.
All right.
So, and I saw like if people see the price point, will they sign up, right? And about 500 companies signed up for the non-existent beta at that point in time. But when companies signed up, we started building. So then we took the money and then we started building.
That's amazing. And so you were thinking about it as collaboration, like specifically for APIs, collaboration. I think that's the way you guys were talking about it when we first met.
Correct. Yes.
And was that, did that, and then how is that positioning working? Like, I know when we first talked, one of the big things that was bugging you at the time was that the big analyst group like Gartner didn't know what bucket to put you in. And they kept thinking about you guys as like an API gateway or something, which you are obviously not. So can you talk about that? Like, did the positioning feel like it wasn't working for you at that point, or maybe the product itself had outgrown the positioning? I don't know. What do you think?
So, you know, collaboration is still pretty much like the primary pillar, you know, of that positioning
for sure.
We did. We eventually, you know, now we call Postman as an API platform for building and using APIs. But we also had to work with analysts. We had to work with our customers to educate them. And we still continue to do so on why this is different than what you had before. And our primary pillar was that as software is modernizing, you know, it's not the 2010 gateway world anymore. And Gartner's actually acknowledged that, that there are, you know, multiple clouds. You have on-prem, you have clouds, you have multiple gateways, you have Kubernetes, you have serverless. What is common behind all of that is that you have hundreds of thousands of APIs that you need to manage in a central place. And not just manage, you've got to get developers involved to build them in a standardized way. And you've got to get your go-to-market teams, you know, who are selling and talking about these APIs and supporting these APIs as well on a common platform. So as our product grew, we had to kind of grow on these two axes. One was depth of workflows that we would support. So we started with one, and then we started adding kind of more things. You know, we added automation testing, we added governance tooling, and these things have added kind of more workflows to the core kind of team collaboration workflow that you know, was already out there. And I think along with that, we also had to educate the market on how this works with the rest of the tools in their ecosystem or the platforms that they have bought. And I think one thing would be relevant here to say was, you know, like why collaboration is still the primary pillar is that, you know, we are very developer first. Like now PLG is a commonly accepted term, but, you know, developers buy the product directly and they need like simple and clear messaging, not too much fluff, you know, and most of our customers actually convert through the product funnel directly. So to them, bombarding them with like lots of stuff would actually be detrimental. So we keep that experience very simple. Every time we've actually added more to it, you know, developer, something actually goes wrong. So it's like more, you mean what to do, very, very less, very, very clear messaging in product. But when we go talk to analysts, and especially when we go talk to customers, we try to, you know, show them the depth of the workflows that we actually can do for them. But we always start with collaboration.
Right. I love it. But you brought up the product-led growth thing, which I you know, it'd be great to talk about that because I think you guys are doing such a neat job of that. So how does it actually work? And so, you know, how much are you selling, like in terms of the paid version of the product to developers versus coming in over the top and selling at a management level, you know, once you have a certain level of adoption at a user level?
Yeah, so we track like, you know, about 500,000 companies who use the product. So in some ways, we never actually go into a company where there is no usage. Like in some ways, by some definitions, you'd always say that it's developer-led. So the way we execute, like, you know, even a top-down sale is we look at where there is a lot of adoption. Either the buyer recognizes there is a lot of adoption and they need to get on the enterprise version. Or we go to them and we tell them that something, you know, more you could do for your APIs if you thought about it, right? And that basically always involves actually having developers on our side. And these could be like hundreds or even thousands of developers basically using our free version. You know, without going into specific numbers, you know, we sign up like thousands of teams per quarter on the self-serve version of the product, you know, hundreds of enterprise customers. But we are, you know, generally, we are very, very diligent that there is existing adoption in place before we go in with a top-down message.
Right. So everybody's very qualified in a way. And so how different is that top-down message? You know, again, coming back to this idea of positioning, like how different is the positioning? Like I imagine it's quite different, the positioning you're coming in top down versus the positioning, like you say, that is very crisp and net for the end user developers that you're trying to get at the bottom of this thing.
Yeah, I think at the top down level, we go into really standardization, control, and developer productivity, like things that a head of engineering or a VP of engineering would care about. We, you know, got Forrester to do an ROI research, you know, talking to customers and really talking about like, you know, dollars saved. So the top-down positioning is kind of at a high level aligned with the strategy that the company has. We sometimes, you know, find companies who are on this track of being API first. That was also something we started evangelizing about, I think about a couple of years ago, that, you know, actually that's where, if you have a gateway, you're not API first. You know, that was another kind of thing that we start talking about, that being API first means thinking about APIs as a critical building block of software infrastructure. And you need to think about them from the point of conceptualization versus, you know, I have a database, I'll put a gateway in front of it and start selling APIs. So we positioned the narrative that way. And then, you know, at a CXO level or an SVP, VP level, we do check for that if, you know, the VP is aligned with this particular philosophy. If you're not, you know, maybe you might still be a customer, but you might not be our best customer. But if there is this view, you know, in the company towards being really, really diligent about APIs and going towards API first, you know, then
I really think you guys have done this amazing job on that API first point of view. Like, you know, we have this very strong, clear point of view of the market, and you're either with us or you're not. Which I think is amazing. Like, I think you guys have done an amazing job of that. Can you describe like how you folks evangelize that point of view when you know, after it was crystallized, like how did you get Gartner on board? How did you get folks talking about this thing? Like you guys are really at the front of this thing.
Yeah, we have to be, right? Like, I think the first thing I did was actually talk to like, you know, the top five CTOs I could find, you know, like multi-hundred billion dollar companies. And, you know, I asked them, like, you know, is this legit? Do you think, you know, this makes sense? Like, if you see this term, you're going to be like calling, you know, BS on it. And they said, no, we love it because that's the way we want to do it. You know, so first we got that conviction. Then, you know, we used channels like, you know, we bought Wall Street Journal ads. We took billboards in New York,
really?
London.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah. Wall Street Journal ads. Oh, my goodness.
We did a lot of work. So we bought billboards in the Bay Area, New York, London. Yeah. You know, colleagues of ours or friends of ours would send, like, you know, where there's a big traffic jam and everybody's stuck reading the API first message. So there was just some general awareness, you know, we had to do. But then we got more in depth. We wrote a book about it, you know, the API first transformation that's available on Amazon. We also did our own podcast called Breaking Changes, where we kind of weaved that story together. Right now, there's a lot of work that we do by going to customers directly, you know, sometimes giving them the book, sometimes listening from them. And I'd say, you know, it's not always like a sales level message. Like, you know, we want that to have percolated through before we go. So you can't, you know, a sales rep cannot go in and say, hey, do you want to be API first tomorrow? That's a more strategic, like 3 to 5 year vision that we align against. But if that's there, you know, then, you know, we give the content out to different levels. And where it really, I think, clicks is in our best customers where engineering managers and directors are already there with the product, you know, and then the top down, you know, message resonates and everybody's kind of happy.
That's amazing. I love it. I also love that the graphic novel is my favorite thing.
I forgot about that. Thank you.
I use it as an example all the time. I'm like, people are like, we're not doing anything cool in B2B marketing. And I'm like, that's wrong. Look at this thing.
Yeah. I have one more thing to share with you. You know, we'll see if once it's out.
Yeah, oh, yeah? Something. Oh, there's a new thing? Oh, boy.
Yeah.
I'm
I think you'll have to see it to believe it. So I'll keep it as a secret. I'll send it to your email. But I think, yeah, that novel was actually, you know, we had a fantastic designer. We have a fantastic designer. And the challenge was actually describing what an API is. So I'd go to, like, every reporter would ask me, like, what the heck is an API? And I'm like, you know, they're everywhere, but they're nowhere. So we were like, okay, it's a visual medium. You know, graphic novels are a visual medium to describe this to you. And it worked really well.
Yeah, that's so good. Yeah, I think you guys have done this amazing job with that. Like, what about, can I come back to the analyst for a minute? Like, at the beginning, the analyst didn't know where to put you. Like, so I got two questions about analysts. Like, the first one is, like, how important are they for you and your business? Like, how important is it to get them on side? And then two, like, how'd you do that? Because at the beginning, like, they went from not getting you at all, putting you in totally the wrong bucket to... Like my impression from the outside is they get you guys now and like they like you. How'd you do that?
I think they're always getting better at kind of getting us. You know, I think it's a long journey. I think for our customers, they have here and now problems that, you know, they're not waiting for an analyst to kind of tell them how to solve. So again, in the curve of API adoption, there are companies who are really early still. You know, they are... deploying their first gateway, they're still figuring out what these practices are. And I think, you know, we are kind of in the leading end of the market where customers who are really, really like innovative, who are technology first, who have thousands of developers, you know, they have been actually cobbling up these homegrown solutions, you know, for a while. So our competition really is with those tools. And I think, you know, working with analysts for me has been, you know, personally, like I enjoy it, you know, as enjoyable as it can be.
yeah, certain kind of person enjoy that.
yeah. But, you know, I try to ask them questions rather than, you know, just enforce, you know, our own opinion, because they probably get it like, you know, I think 20 times a day. So we kind of have an active conversation with, you know, the Gartners and Foresters of the world, and we try to understand where they're coming from. And eventually, I think they saw, you know, the growth of cloud, growth of serverless, Kubernetes, you know, public APIs, that, you know, there is no one like single category In fact, there are many categories now around APIs, and they now publish, you know, a whole bunch of other material. One thing that really worked for us was actually then surveying our own customer base and user base. So we publish the state of the API report, which is the largest API report on the planet, and everybody reads it, you know, VCs, analysts, customers, and we have gotten better at packaging it. And we supplement it with the data that we have on the Postman platform to kind of add more weight to it, which I don't think anyone in the industry has.
That's amazing. That's totally amazing. Yeah, I love it. Talk to me a bit about, so you guys have raised a lot of money. How much?
Yes.
It's a lot.
400 million plus, yeah, something of that order, yes.
Yeah, oh, wow. And how big are you now in terms of like do you publish any, I think you publish like how many users you have and just yeah. for people listening to this podcast, it might not know the scale we're talking about on this thing.
So we have about 28 million, you know, people signed up on the platform across 500,000 companies. You know, we are there in like every industry, every geo, you know, customers in 100 plus countries and, you know, 700 employees right now. Past Series D, our last reported valuation was $5.6 billion. And we have raised, I think, north of $430 million.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Do you see, coming back to this idea of positioning, like what's next? Like, do you see a future where there's going to be a shift in this positioning to broaden it out again? Like, what's the vision on this thing at this point?
You know, that's a great question. So I feel actually at this point in time, you know, maybe we'll come back to this like in a couple of years. I feel like we are very well satisfied with the breadth. You know, in this economic climate, I think what we are getting good at is really focus and depth. Because now when we got like more and more of these things working, you know, what we have seen customers now to do is like they're very discerning about what they want to buy. Is this stuff actually getting used? And we've kind of doubled down on it. So anything that is just kind of a promise of the future is getting replaced by stuff that is, you know, actually useful today. So what we did this year was actually refined our packaging. We broke our enterprise version down into like, you know, 3-4 modules so customers could pick what they want to buy. And that has, you know, accelerated our growth rate on the enterprise side. So I feel, you know, with our positioning overall, there's a lot of breadth, right? And with the user base we have, we actually... you know, continue to scale the product. We have to satisfy now, you know, more protocols. We have to satisfy, you know, more tooling needs. Like in some cases, we are assimilating like entire companies, you know, like our product roadmap, that's how it kind of looks like, right? It was a company for just docs through AI. Now Postman does that. You know, we launched Postbot, you know, this year. And Postbot is, you know, something that's going to help you with AI across the whole API lifecycle. So if you are doing anything as a company with, you know, just a tool plus AI, now Postman can do that. So so I feel pretty good about that. But I think now what our focus is on really, you know, getting scaled velocity of logos and then, you know, scaling the heck out of this for the next, like, you know, 5 to 10 years.
I love it. That's amazing. Have you got competitors popping up now in your space that are attempting to copy you? Like usually that's what happens with something cool like this. You have something cool. It's this really neat, innovative thing. And then what you'll get are these kind of copycat sort of attempting to fast follow you and come in and disrupt you on your own turf. Like, are you seeing any of that? And if so, are you doing anything about it? Does it worry you?
Yeah, that's a good question. So the, you know, short answer is yes, right? Like people start copying you in bits and pieces. But I think what my understanding is they don't know why they're copying us, you know, and they don't know why they're building what they're building. Like we have to stay ahead. I think we give ourselves like 6 months, you know, 9 months to really stay ahead. You can't be, you know, not paranoid, sit on something that you built and you know, wait for revenue to come in. So I think the typical point of attack for, you know, a company that's going enterprise is always, you know, the bottom end of the market, right? Like now one thing that creates a challenge is like, you know, how do you compete with free? Because, you know, we have a 10x better free product than every other free product out there. So that's one way we look at it. I think the second is basically user experience, where if the user experience becomes very enterprisey, too cluttered, you know, too complicated, yep. That's when, you know, sometimes somebody gets, you know, an opening. So we're very diligent about it. You know, we are still active in all communities. We scan Twitter. We are responsive on support. We're responsive on our communities, you know, LinkedIn, everything. So, you know, we just believe that, you know, every developer, every student, and, you know, now maybe in schools, like everybody should just start with Postman. You know, that. So we, yeah. You know, we're looking at like 20 years ahead. And I think it's sometimes, you know, interesting to see how other people try to differentiate and position. You know, yep. So far it's been 10 years now, more than 10 years for me to build this thing. And, you know, I'd say we are pretty good at a few things and we stick to it. You know, when we stray past what we are good at, I think that becomes more of a challenge. But yeah.
Oh, I love that too. Is there any, like, we're at the end of time, but is there anything, just as a last question, like, is there any advice you'd give to, like, yourself? If you could go back to yourself 10 years ago or whatever it was at the beginning of this, is there any advice you give, or is there anything you do differently?
I think one thing that I would do differently is, like, ensure that I talk to, like, you know, 50 to 100 customers per year. You know, that's one thing I feel like starts chipping away, you know, on your time. And I think I've kind of brought that back as a goal for next year for myself. Because what happens is that, you know, for our product now, you know, if you're selling like a very specific enterprise product, maybe you should, I mean, everybody should still do it, in my opinion. But
I think they should still do it, even if it's a big enterprise product.
Yeah.
I think they should do it.
Yeah. So I think something that happened in this whole, like, you know, kind of, I mean, we love remote work, and I know you probably do too, but kind of, you know, I have this notion of like, don't come to our office, but go to our customer's office, you know, go and understand how they're using the product, why they're doing it. And for us, like, developers are so innovative. They're so creative. They're trying to do, you know, new things to the product. And it's very hard to see it in the data. You have to really show up. Yeah. And I feel, you know, the most conviction I've had with things that we have done is when really somebody tells me, you know, like, their life kind of, I mean, their working life depends on it, you know, and, you know, sometimes even dollars tell you the wrong picture, right? Like, I mean, in SaaS, if your customer is not renewing, you know, it doesn't matter. So you have to win the customer, like, every year, you know, every month, every year. And I feel like that kind of got a little bit, you know, missed during the pandemic. And you know, yeah. We were talking about the pandemic for a while. But I feel like, yeah, that was very hard to do over Zoom. You know, you just can't call customers over Zoom and say, how is it going? Because they're on Zooms all day. But now when we show up at our customer's office, you know, they're interested, they're engaged. So I wish I would do more of that.
I love this idea too, because I think there's so much to be gained from this kind of, like you say, the numbers tell you one thing, but there's all of this, like, qualitative stuff that you can only get by having a conversation with people. I love that. Hey, so thanks so much for joining me. This has been awesome.
Thanks for having me here. That was a fun conversation.